Trek Companion. This is episode 342. I'm your host, Brian Williams.
I am Adam Caesar.
I'm Stephen Embry.
And today we're going to be discussing Star Trek Discovery's fifth season episodes, Janal and Face the Strange. Here we go.
Janal, Season 5, Episode 3, original release date April 11th, 2024, directed by Andy Armaganian, written by Kyle Jarrow and Lauren Wilkinson. Guest cast include Tig Notaro as Jet Reno, Annabelle Wallace as Zora, Tara Rowling as Tarina, Eve Harlow as Mole, Ian Alexander as Gray Tal, Patrick Kwok-Choon as Gen Rees, Orville Cummings as Christopher, David Benjamin Tomlinson as Linus, Raven Dowda as Tracy Pollard, Andreas Opperges as Guardian Z, Claire Coulter as Kizara Bo, Ingrid Ray Doucette as Moderator, and Victor Andres Trellis Turgeon as Dubin.
Burnham takes advantage of their lead and heads to Trill in search of another piece to the map that will lead them to the Progenitor's life-building technology. On Trill, Captain Burnham, Book, and Kluber must pass a dangerous test to prove themselves worthy of the next clue. Adrea connects with Gray, while Saru's first day as ambassador is complicated when politics comes into play.
You knew the answer.
Yes, we are here for the clue. We understand you have it.
I have been waiting for you nearly my whole life, but I cannot help you. Only Janal can.
The original host? Didn't he die hundreds of years ago?
Janal joined with our symbiont so that it could carry his secrets across the ages until a worthy seeker arrived. He requires that you speak with him directly.
All right, Janal. Steve, kick us off on this one.
All right, Janal. So we are in our next leg of our journey to find these clues, this treasure hunt or whatever we're doing, and off to Trill. So it gives us a chance to visit Gray, and they have their little reunion there, and so on and so forth. So I think, like so many episodes that we've seen of this series, what strikes me the most is how it feels like things you've seen before stuck together and not done as well as the way I've seen it done in other shows or other episodes or whatever, right? I mean, so you have the whole, we of course, DS9 did this with someone getting, you know, they did it, I think, with several cast members where they get the Trill, former Trill hosts in their system and that kind of business. And of course, Culber, you know, that actor, I really enjoy his work, generally speaking. This was interesting. I'm sure he had a good time doing this character. It does sound a bit like kind of doing a Batman voice or something there. It's kind of over the top. But, you know, that's cool. But again, it kind of gets, things just kind of get dragged out. I always feel like these things could be half as long as what they are. And it also gets convoluted, and then some of the like a good example of the kind of the writing, why is it this way, is when they're talking about the test and you know how it's a test and how there's good and bad and deciding how, you know, I mean, there's literally lines like there's bad and good outweighs bad, and it sounds like, I don't know, cavemen or something at some point. It's just, it's kind of ridiculous. One thing I kind of thought was interesting, I made a note of, and we see this periodically, I was thinking about this in Star Trek, is how inevitably, you know, the series are a reflection of the time they're created in, certain elements of them are. You know, we have this ongoing bit with Rayner and how his leadership styles are not really fitting with this crew, and you get the impression they might be passé, which one at some points when in some Star Trek series that kind of thing is more common and more the norm. And you also have language like they're having one-on-one meetings and such, and I don't remember them talking of having like one-on-ones, you know, and these kinds of those kind of meetings, which is definitely a last decade or so kind of workplace kind of thing. So I think it's interesting when the language of the workplace and these kind of ideas seep in, kind of like we first saw counselors on Next Gen, for example, and that kind of thing. But overall, I mean, I like some of the ideas, and I like that.
Yeah, when they start talking about the bridge crew working from home, the word.
Yeah, yeah. So we got a hybrid model on this starship, you know.
We're going to favor remote.
Right. Well, anyway, those are some of my first thoughts on this.
Yeah, like that stuff in the quarry when they're walking. Like how many times it felt like they were walking for 8 hours and we heard every boring line. It was, well, come on. Oh my God.
I thought we were going to get to walk through the cool cave.
Well, yeah. And then at the end of it all, we found out it was all his plan.
His ruse.
That they weren't actually going through there to get the clue. I mean, oh my God. Yeah, that was a bit much. And it was all the talking. I heard somebody, somewhere I read a review or heard a podcast, somebody pointed out like that. Remember the pilot episode where, or not pilot, the first episode of the season, right? Where they had that landslide or whatever that went on forever. And somehow that and the whole action scene was still boring. And I definitely remember we talked about it was boring. Somebody pointed out, one of the reasons it's boring is because they're talking the whole time. They're coming up with their plan, and it's like, this is not exciting. This is like sitting in on a work meeting. I mean, it's kind of.
I would be interested to see on average, like how long the scripts are per episode in this series compared to others or something, because there is a lot of.
The weird part is, of course, this was the first show in the history of Star Trek that didn't have to hit a certain time, right? They could do whatever was best for the story. That's never been the case before in Star Trek. This was this being the first streaming show. But they still tend to hit pretty close to the same time. I do have one question. Did I just forget it? Did it happen like last season? When did, what's her name? Tarina, the Vulcan that Saru's engaged to? When did she become president? When was that?
I don't recall.
I don't remember.
Okay. I thought maybe I missed it or something.
Well, what I remember, what Vulcan was hesitant to rejoin the Federation.
Yeah, no, I remember that was part of it, and they're not called Vulcan anymore, and all that stuff. But I just didn't remember her becoming president. It must have happened last season, and I forgot it. Anyway, Adam, your first thoughts on Janal?
Yeah, I'm pretty much in line with Steve. I think my favorite part about this episode was Kluber. What's funny is when the Trill were describing the we're going to do this process where your mind goes in here. I'm like, okay, Burnham, because Burnham is always the one that jumps in and does this stuff. And I was actually surprised me that she's like,
oh, Kluber was your favorite. Yeah.
Kluber was actually the one who was going to do this. And I enjoyed his performance. I thought it was, it's clever. You know, we're going to put a clue in the Trill host from 800 years ago. It's clever. I mean, it's kind of been, we've, like Steve said, we've seen this before in Deep Space Nine. But now that's going on almost 30 years ago. We're getting close to that. So I forgive him for retreading the storyline. And I've said it before. I mean, every season of Discovery is a scavenger hunt. And I feel like so far this season, they've tried to kind of make more traditional style Star Trek shows, but they're still stuck in this, having to hunt for these clues and these kind of things. Another thing that kind of, I really liked Book in the previous season. I'm not sure how I feel about him this season because we're still dealing with the same Burnham love issues. I'm like, to me, it's like, crap or get off the pot. They're either going to be in love and get together and just get married and do that, or just end it, because it's a distraction that we've done over and over and over again with the Burnham character in her, relationship and love interest thing. So I don't know. I'm kind of feeling like I don't, other than the point that he's there to have a relationship with Maul.
I don't think she should end up with him unless it turns out that he's actually a Klingon.
Hey, I like it. a couple of things, like, when they ended, so when Kluber, when he leaves and they stay to try to, I'm like, are they crazy? There's these two basically dragon creatures that are cloaked. Just leave and come back later with more people. And so, but no, they got to fight it out and get trapped in the rocks and then realize, now I can talk to them because we don't have weapons. That's a kind of an old thing too. It's like, oh, just because I put down the phaser, the beast isn't going to want to eat me now. And I think that gets overplayed a little bit.
It's a good thing the monsters are cliched just like everything else, so they behave like they expected. Mm-hmm.
There was a line there that made me chuckle though, kind of when Janal first inhabited Kluber. I'm talking about, let's go for this nice long walk. And he says, wow, this guy really works out.
Yeah, that's funny.
It's funny because, like, you can see the writers, good. writing that line and knowing that he's going to say that line and knowing that like he knows that that's what we all think, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm a pretty straight guy, but Wilson Cruz is very he's a very fit man. He looks very good on this show.
It's also fun. It's also fun to imagine him, you know, just improvising that line himself.
That would be awesome.
I did have a giggle moment at was at the end of this episode where, you know, when he was talking and he was saying, "Oh, it's so unbelievable. I was had this out of body, you know, I was there." And I'm like, "Didn't you die and come back to life? Were you in the afterworld?" Like, this, yeah. This is unbelievable.
This is the second most interesting thing I've ever known. Tilly stuff was kind of fun with when she got snarky on the 20 words thing. I like that.
Was that this episode or the next one? Oh yeah, that was this one. You're right. You're right. Yeah, she tells him off. Yeah, that was funny. That was fun. I don't know. I guess it just like everything else in the episode, that entire sequence and idea. Yeah, like you said, it just felt like, well, I've kind of seen this before. There's not really anything interesting or new here.
The political stuff with Saru is kind of interesting. You know, they got into their kind of their first fight, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I liked her Tarina's response to that, to basically say, you know, conflict is a part of
any relationship.
You know, we don't expect it to always be perfect, and you know, we'll get through it. And I mean, it's logical, but there's also we've established that they can love their partner in the way that they can love someone. It's affectionate, I guess, and thoughtful. Yeah, I like it. I've said it before. I like that relationship. I think it's kind of interesting. And you know, I remember last time we had the question of, for all we know, we weren't going to see Saru again. I didn't think that's what was going to happen, but here we got our answer. You know, we had time with Saru in his new role.
And we see what his plot line is going to be throughout. It's going to be political discourse.
Yeah, I mean, I hope that there's more to it than that, but he didn't have much. He was barely in the next episode, but we'll get to that.
And it's, and you know, the thing is, it's still, what's tiresome about it though, is it also feels like, again, kind of the stuff we've seen before. I mean, I almost felt like the Vulcans are still like this, you know, like this whole, you know, nervous of outsiders and, you know, the looks of something and all this. Like, man, I mean, this was 700-800 years, whatever. It's nothing changes except the name of them. Apparently.
Well, you know, it's one of these dumb things where it's like, I know this is lame. I know listeners, I know this is a lame comment, but if I liked the show more, if I thought the writing was better, which we always say that's where this show's, everything else is great, but the writing, not so much maybe on this show. This is the kind of comment I would never have if I was enjoying the show more. But when I'm not enjoying it, this is the kind of thing I notice. When Janal first wakes up, what year is it? What do they say? 3191, something like that?
Yeah.
That's like the Earth year. But I don't know that that's like the Trill year or a year that would mean anything to a Trill. Maybe because he was in Starfleet. I mean, I don't know. But it was immediately like, yep, got it, moving on. It was like...
Is the universal translator translating that too, you know?
By the way, is Earth even a part of this Starfleet at this point in time, the Federation? I can't remember if they
I think they might have changed the name there too. I don't know. I don't care.
Well, that's why the Stardate always made sense. They should go back
to like Stardate, blah, blah, blah. That would have, you know, then I wouldn't have questioned it. Or 3191 or blah, blah, blah on the Trill calendar. You know, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I know it's a dumb little thing. I know. But I don't, these are the kind of things, I don't think about these things when I'm into the show, you know?
Well, Brian, I'm going to say this probably repeatedly while we do. I mean, it's stupid that they went this far in the time. I mean, you know, 900 years ago, I mean, English was vastly different than it, you were talking about. People don't change, that kind of thing, Steve. I mean, yeah, it's 900 years into the future. They're exactly the same. They speak exactly the same. They dress exactly the same. I'm like,
if
it's just ridiculous.
Janal was suddenly just Janal, you would think that Janal would be not even speaking the same way. Yeah.
I mean, it's just, you have to like, I have to suspend my disbelief every time they talk about being that far in the future.
But then there's also the point of like, they had this incredibly, incredibly elaborate plan to hide these clues so that only somebody who was really worthy would, and it's all hinges upon, you know, Janal remaining alive. Didn't they make it clear that, you know, Trill's, this is about as old as a Trill? I guess they got lucky, another 10 years. Right. Forget it. Nobody's
just worked out.
And nothing seismic happens, so knock off that rock
that where rock, hiding right. under there. Yeah, you know? Yeah, because when we actually see where he's hitting it, it's certainly a hell of a lot simpler.
Yeah, you might as well that's like pull it out of his behind or whatever. I mean, it didn't like, make any sense. You
know, a nice wind could have blown that off. They also got lucky
because that trail must have been just born, and that was his first host at the time.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're right. If 800 years is their life expectancy, yeah.
Oh, by the way, you're going to have to live to be 800. I know that sucks, but sure, you have to live to 800.
Let's find some good things to say here. We talked about we like Wilson Cruz's performance. We talked about we like all the Saru Tirina stuff. Tirina. The Tilly XO things were okay. Tilly, at least. Interesting. Anything else? We didn't talk about the Deera and Gray stuff. It was fine. I guess they're breaking up and, you know, young people are inexperienced with that. So that's what it looks like. Okay, sure. But I still like the character of Adira. Mm-hmm. We, you know, probably never got to know Gray well enough to exactly have an opinion. But, you know, I like Adira. I like that.
They have a lot to do because obviously, I mean, we're going to get into the next episode where, you know, it's the... clever way of doing a flashback episode, but yeah, I mean, they clearly know this is the last season, so it's kind of like you gotta have to start wrapping stuff up.
But they didn't when they were shooting it, remember? They didn't find out until after they shot the season.
But it feels like it's been shot this way. It feels like it was written as a last season.
What is this episode about?
What is it about? Breaking up is hard to do. I don't know. I had a hard time coming up with what this episode was about.
It's because it's so much going on. They try to do so much stuff and it's just all over the place. It makes it difficult. I mean, they touch on the complexities of change and adapting to change and new situations because, you know, you do have Saru and Tirina in a relationship thing, and you have a new relationship dynamic with Adira and Gray, you know, I guess, but that doesn't really apply much to what's going on the Trill kind of. So I'm not sure.
All right. Not much of an answer there. But that tells us something about the episode, I guess. All right. Let's do 6 degrees for Janal. Steve, Wilson Cruz plays Janal Bix. Cruz previously played what character on the TV series Star Trek Discovery?
Dr. Colbert?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Very good. Steve has one. It's getting hard, folks. To do these 6 degrees sometimes. Let me tell you. Yeah, Steve has one. Moving on.
Face the Strange, Season 5, Episode 4. Original release date, April 18th, 2024. Directed by Lee Rose, written by Sean Cochran. Guest cast include Tig Notaro as Jet Reno, Annabelle Wallace as Zora, Hannah Cheeseman as Miriam, Eve Harlow as Mole, Elias Chifexis as Locke, Emily Coots as Kayla Detmer, Patrick Kwok Jun as Gen Reese, Odin Oladejo as Joanne Owishakun, Ronnie Rowe Jr. as R.A. Bryce, Orville Cummings as Christopher, and David Benjamin Tomlinson as Linus.
On the way to the next clue, Discovery is sabotaged by Mole, who while on Trill planted a mysterious weapon on Adria's uniform. In the ready room, Berman and Reiner attempt to beam to Discovery's command center, but their personal transporters convulse. The ready room is suddenly transformed, now awash in sparks and debris with stars speeding past the rear viewport, leaving them both perplexed.
We're in dry dock, when Discovery was first being built. Wow. So we haven't just gone back in time.
We're jumping through it.
Right. Saru called himself Commander. Everyone on the bridge, that worker just now. They're all living in the moment, but we're not being affected at all.
What if this isn't temporal? What if this is some kind of neural weapon, someone messing their brains?
Yeah, but Zora didn't register any vessels in the area before this happened. What was happening when this first started?
Commander Voskin called that reported energy fluctuation.
And then we tried to beam to the bridge. That's why whatever this isn't impacting us. It hit the ship at the exact moment we were beaming.
Face the Strange. Adam, get us going.
I'm going to start off by saying the flash beaming annoys the crap out of me. I saw it on the first, I remember when Saru and that political person that worked for his, you know, fiance, they just beamed upstairs. Like, do people just not walk or take stairs or, you know, like, how do they get their exercise? I'm like, the little personal beam outs annoy the crap out of me. I know they guess they had to try and figure out a way to make it seem like they were 800 or 900 years in the future, some sort of technological advance, but the personal beam outs are annoying to me. They distract me, and it's just like, just walk. It's fine. You can even walk out of the shot and we can cut to you in the ready room.
Yeah.
Like, they walk if they have something to say to each other, you know?
Yeah. You don't even need to.
The previous episode had that thing where, yeah, where Burnham and Tarina's assistant just went up to the second floor and it was them walking into a little thing. Instead of an elevator going up a few feet, it was like beam.
Yeah, yeah, wasn't even stairs. Like, come on. Yeah, one floor of stairs.
This is like cool. It's kind of dumb. All right.
I mean, it's just silly to me. I'm like I said, you mean you don't even have to have a shot with them walking out of frame. You can just be like, I need to talk to you immediately. And then you just cut to them in the ready room. You don't need that. I mean, it clearly costs money to do that. So, but whatever. It just annoys the crap out of me. The reason I bring it up because it's like it's pivotal to the plot points of this episode. So yeah, this feels like a let's go on a reunion tour of Discovery's missions.
I'll give almost a little feels bit, like that. We'll get to why. I don't think it does, but go ahead.
So yeah, I mean, we're flashing through time. It's a clever way to kind of go back and look at past things that Discovery did, and you know, and then the point of the episode is a bonding moment for Burnham and her new XO. It's kind of the whole point of this episode. So he can kind of see how she does things, how the crew does things, and he can see that, oh, this works. Because in the beginning of the episode, he's very grouchy, and he's like, what if my way works better? And, you know, you see them getting into this, you know, it was clearly going to happen from the get-go when she asked him to be the number one officer. So, yeah, we're getting into this. And like I said, it's just kind of a romp through past Discovery missions. I mean, it's kind of fun to see Burnham fight herself as a younger version. I mean, but yeah, I think these are kind of things, you know, science fiction things we've seen before. So I wouldn't say there's anything original that came out of this episode, other than, you know, we get a little bit more of our new XO.
Steve, your first thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I mean, usually time travel episodes or courtroom episodes are usually kind of a slam dunk. It's kind of like, you know, you're going to more often than not, you have something good come out of those in Treks. And this is just, gosh, they screw this up too, you know, because a lot of it feels boring to me. Like for the beginning, I'm just like, we know what's happening. The exact thing that's happening is kind of irrelevant. We know what's her name, dropped the thing and it's causing this to happen. And you got to work your way out of it. We don't need 15 minutes on it or whatever it feels like. It just goes on and on and on, them trying to figure it out and talk through it. It's so dialogue heavy. And then you get mired in the whole details of what the heck's going on because it's so bad. Like as we talked in the last one, the writing's bad. You get caught up in wacky things. Like how is it that they're jumping to all these really dramatic things and nothing's going on in that room whenever they jump to? And on top of it, wouldn't the odds are be that like over half of them, it'd be like, it's night shift, everyone's asleep, and it's nothing happened this week, you know, but that's never where they jump. It's always something dramatic.
Or like jumping into a space that a human is already standing in, and now there's like an exploding person or something.
Yeah, so that'd be interesting, I suppose.
I totally agree with you, though, that like it's oddly boring. And the reason I think that for that. Okay. So first, I want to say that I just couldn't wait. So yeah, there's a brief moment near the beginning where I think, oh, this might be an interesting episode. They might be, you know what reminded me? You know, what's that? Captain Crunch, you guys eat the oops, all berries. You know that one?
Yeah, yeah.
I did think like, oops, we made an episode of Star Trek. But that didn't last very long. It did not last very long. Because then you realize, okay, we're going to jump to all these extraordinary moments. But, you know, we're just going to like, say, oh, this is when Asira is attacking the ship. We're not going to actually see Asira. Right. We're going to see the exact same empty corridor, except person in a costume, you know, like with a face shield running by. And we're just going to tell you that, oh, yeah, this was the Asira moment. Or we're going to say, oh, Jason Isaac's character, what's his name?
Lorca. Lorca. When they said Lorca, Lorca's, I was excited. It's like, oh, we're going to see Lorca.
No. He's off ship right now. You know, like every single moment is like that. Even the one that could have been, we've never seen this before. Freaking awesome. I was excited. We've gone to, this is dry dock when Discovery was first being built. Oh, my God. I'm waiting for that. I'm waiting for the big wide shot. Nope. It's only ever from inside, and we can just see somehow it's like the bridge, San Francisco Bridge, is on the view screen, or is it supposed to be a window? I'm not sure. But we never actually see Discovery being built. No,
they spent that money on the flash beams.
Yeah, they spent the money on the flash. So that's what it is. It's the whole thing. It's really just the same. It's just those same two, Rayner and Burnham, and they're just talking, and they just tell us that we're in these amazing moments. Even when everything is always, it's just always like, how can we do this without spending any money? The one time, were you guys with me when they jumped way into the whatever it was, 30 years? And we didn't know it was 30 years, but it was way into the future, right? And we see like dust around and we hear some old pop song. And I, for just a second, I thought,
The Short.
Right, right.
Yeah. I thought, oh, cool. They're going to tie this into that short. Awesome. No.
No.
Oh, my God. How do you not do that? Jeez. Oh my gosh.
It's kind of like traveling to all these exotic locales and never leaving your hotel, your room. or if you traveled in time and we're in the ancient whatever, and you all you're doing is jumping in the bathrooms or outhouses.
Yeah.
Or something.
Well, it'd be like me and the three of us jumping back to Dallas in 1963 and not going down to Dealey Plaza. Just like, meh. We don't need to go.
You know what's going on right now? I don't know, but we're in a different building. Yeah.
I swear we just traveled through time. I know everything looks the same and we're not going to go outside and look, but we definitely did. I'm really for sure. The couple of brief tiny moments when maybe we saw something, it was just stock footage or something, right? Like, oh, that's the Red Angel. That was me. By the way, I wanted Rainer to be like, spoiler alert, jeez. but yeah, so she saw the Red Angel on the screen. Okay. And that was, but you know, it's like, this could have been
really cool.
This could have been a fun episode, and it's not like it would have really cost them that much. I mean, we saw Arium. Okay, they got everybody in their old costumes and their old hairdos. Okay, but
what kind of annoyed me is like, when they're doing the, oh, we can't run into anybody. We can't run into our old selves. We have to be incognito. We can't change it. And then somewhere in the middle of that, it was like, all right, we're just going to interact with everybody. And then to me, this is just lazy writing. We're just going to fix that by like, if we cover this spider up, none of this would ever happen. I'm like,
well,
just pick a lane.
They did say that we can interact with them in this particular timeline because this is the one where we're going to reset everything so they won't remember. But yeah, I will say I did like, what's her name? Janet? No, that's a different Janet Reno. What's Reno's first name? Jet, right. Jet Reno. I like Tig Notaro a lot. I think she's great. And I really liked having the character of Reno back. I was like, oh, this is good. The last episode, especially this one. She's really funny in this one. Oh, the last one, she had that bit when they were doing their one-on-ones where she...
Oh, the chips. Yeah, that's
funny. Last time I did this, they had chips or something. That was funny. But the funniest scene in this episode, I like that scene when she's like, are you stuck in a time loop, Stamets? And he's like, right. No.
No.
That was good. That made me laugh. That was funny. But I feel like it has as much or more to do with her. I mean, the time bug is a literal bug.
It's a spider, even. What did you guys think of Burnham's persuasion? Like, I know when you died. Now they're all.
I didn't understand it. I had a note
about
that.
Yeah, makes sense.
Burnham convinces the crew to help her by saying Arium would quit in the right scenario. Is that right? I didn't really understand that exactly. Mm-hmm. I understand that they were trying to say that the reason she was able to convince them is because she has a relationship with them, and then that's why Rayner is wrong and that it is good and all that. I understand that idea. But I didn't actually understand what it was she said to Arium.
She said when she died.
She's like, how does that convince her? I don't
understand. I don't know.
That makes sense.
It made absolutely no sense to me that they wrote it that way.
It's like you're right. That's what I would do in this situation I haven't encountered yet. That is nonsense. It doesn't mean
so
anything.
Now I'm going to let you take over the ship.
Yeah.
You random person.
I will say that sequence when they really explain the entire plan. I think when they start meeting on deck 13, and there's a moment where Stamets explains and they have the conversation about the plan, how they're going to make the ship drop out of warp. And then drop the warp bubble and all that whole scene. It was so technobabbly that it didn't even like when you listen to, it didn't make sense, is what I was going to say. Now, when you listen to the technobabble, say, on Next Gen or something, even when the words are made up, it feels like it makes some logical sense. And here they just went past me, and I just like, I don't understand what you're saying you're actually going to do. I don't understand.
Like I said, I mean, it's, yeah, like I was saying, you know, they're not supposed to interact, but in this one, we'll be able to interact because, you know, just because.
Here's another example of doing too much or writing too much. I thought was a good example of that kind of thing. And I know we're getting really negative about what we're talking about here, but is when Rayner and Stamets, you know, when, you know, Stamets gets on him because he's being Rayner, and then he says, well, what can I do? He backs down. Okay, what can I do to help you in this right now? And they did. Oh, okay.
Do this thing.
Stop right there.
You did.
Don't have the silly line, the cliched line, and the smile, and that just seemed like,
let's show them how a couple of old dogs.
That was bad.
Wasn't good. It wasn't good.
I was like, you guys aren't even friends. You just met basically, you know, an hour ago.
And Stamets is the old guy. I didn't, but no, I totally agree. Like, yeah, so he had that moment already. You had it when he said, you know what, let me help. Well, it'd be great if you could move something to that console. Okay. And he goes over there. Scene. That's the end of your scene. You didn't need that.
The ending is kind of like that too. I mean, I don't remember exactly how it transpires, but I remember it being cheesy, and it just keeps, now we're on to the next stage of this.
Yeah. You know, the previous episode, I didn't talk about it, but that's how I felt. The previous one, Burnham says something to Colbert, like, you know, there's that hole lungs. They're in whatever they call 10 forward. You know, maybe by the end of the journey, we'll both find answers. And it was just a little overridden. Yeah, it was just too much. And yeah, that's definitely the same thought, you know.
So when they're both in the ready room and Stamets is like having trouble, did he say that he was having trouble configuring back to the old way of the way the consoles worked? That was his reasoning for being slow?
Yes, because he said that it didn't have all those upgrades they had done 900 years in the future.
Okay, I thought so. And I thought, well, that kind of makes the character look bad. I mean, you're supposed to be a genius. You should be able to. So it's like, I just thought it was a bad reason for them to say, oh, I can't do this because I can't remember the old ISO, basically.
I still don't. I mean, I don't think it was bad. You know, again, we talked about, I'm remembering those because there was a moment in here where they talked about the fight with control and stuff. And I remember how just, I'm sorry, but legitimately bad I thought those episodes were. I don't think that about this exactly. It's just not good. And this one was almost more painful than the previous one because there's a variation of Face the Strange that I think could have been good. So it's almost harder to watch this one than the previous one, just because I got excited for a moment that, hey, here comes an episode of Star Trek.
I mean, for the viewers out there, I mean, I would consider these two episodes average for Discovery. I know we kind of bashed on them a bit, but it's Discovery. And I think we're more upset about not necessarily the episode, but the missed opportunities, the cool things that they could have done here that they just didn't see. And just there's some sloppy writing that's going on in this episode. That's just like a self-inflicted wounds is what I would call this episode. It's like, it could have been so much better, but it's kind of got sloppy.
I'm kind of baffled. I mean, I don't want to get snarky about this, but I legitimately would like to sit in the rooms where they're writing this and see what goes on. Like how does no one catch certain things that are just like, yeah, but you know, this doesn't, I don't know. Or we're all wrong, but I don't think that's the case.
You know, if we're not going to see Osiris, if we're not going to see Lorca, if we're not going to see this person or that person.
Well, I mentioned him.
Control. Well, it's not that. It's just that, think about how this is going to look and play. Every one of these scenes is going to feel like the same scene, really. And they're telling us what's on the other side of the wall, but, you know, maybe we don't need four of these scenes because they're all going to play the same. Unless we're going to do something like bring a siren or something. Okay, that's a different thing. But otherwise, these are all going to play the same, and it's going to make it boring by the time you get to the second one, let alone the fourth one. So, yeah, let's do it a different way. I don't know. I do wonder, like, I purposely do not read reviews of anybody else's reviews of these episodes and stuff until after we've recorded our podcast, because I don't want to, you know, I want to give my honest, immediate thoughts and opinions. And But I'm always interested to see. And it feels like the people that I do read and stuff, they seem to dislike it a lot more than we do. What is this episode about?
Well, I do think the one thing about this episode, I think it was the what they were trying to say was a little bit more tangible. Obviously, I think it's brought home in that early scene in the writing room with Burnham and Riley that there are more than one way to do something. You could be a hard ass, or you can be, you know, what some might call a player's coach, where you're more friendly. Just there's a lot of different ways to lead, and I think that played out in this episode is the two different styles of leadership and how they kind of got merged together in the end, and everybody was happy in a crew by the end.
Yeah, I think they're trying to say something about teamwork and adapting styles to work with other people and problem solving, I suppose, you know, at least that's the vibe, but it's not super solid, right? But that it's definitely, I think the, you know, Rainer and Burnham and getting through that, but you know, they could have been better, right? The way they conveyed that, I suppose.
I like the idea of Burnham fighting herself, you know, takes you all the way back to
sure
Enemy Within.
We saw it in mm-hmm. Lower Decks.
All right, let's do 6 degrees for Face the Strange. Adam, Sonequa Martin-Green plays the Red Angel. She previously played what character on the Star Trek series, the television series Star Trek Discovery?
Michael Burnham?
Yep, that's right. All right, you guys tie it for the day. Okay.
I was like, is there something I'm missing? Did she make a guest appearance?
We did get some sad news. Recently, Lower Decks. Well, the good news first, Strange New Worlds has been renewed for a season 4. No surprise there, considering it's been Paramount Plus has had the Yellowstone shows have been in the top 10, Picard season 3 and Strange New Worlds have been in the top 10, and that's it. So no surprise that Strange New Worlds would get picked up for another season, but glad to hear it. Since they're still in the middle of shooting season 3 right now, I think they're closer to the end of shooting than the beginning. But we assume season 3 will premiere sometime in 2025.
Probably, what do you think? January, maybe?
Maybe. I guess that means season 4 would probably be 2026, probably. But glad to see that they renewed it. That's good. But the downside, the bad news is that they have canceled Lower Decks. We'd all speculated maybe they would keep it around, even though obviously it didn't have the best ratings. I mean, at least it wasn't in the top 10 the way that the aforementioned shows were.
It's animated.
But we thought maybe, unlike Discovery, which also has not had the best ratings, but unlike the Discovery, Lower Decks is animated and can't cost that nearly as much to make. So we hoped maybe they would give it another season, but they will not be doing that. It has been canceled. The upcoming season 5 will be its last season. Hopefully they didn't end the thing on a cliffhanger. Or maybe they have a little bit of room to change stuff. I don't know. Probably not. But hopefully we'll get something akin to closure for the story.
Maybe they'll do an animated movie on Paramount Plus.
That would be awesome. Maybe.
And like a Serenity.
John G. Trimble passed away. He was involved in the letter writing campaign that made a season 3 of Star Trek. So he's kind of famous in the Trek lore for that. He's one of those people that without that person, you don't know if we would even be sitting here kind of thing. But
I didn't hear that he had passed. Was he Bijo's husband, I think?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I remember that when I went to the Star Trek Beyond premiere, the only Star Trek movie premiere I ever got to go to, down in San Diego. I think I remember telling you guys this story. I turned around and Bijo Trimble was sitting behind me, and I recognized her, you know, just from interviews and things. And I asked her if I could take her picture, and she said yes. And then she immediately introduced him, and I just had this sense of, like, they've probably spent their entire lives with him getting short shrift. I'm not exactly sure why. But I didn't know his name until that moment. I don't know why. Maybe that's just the way that Gene Roddenberry, you know, under on the down low, put her name out there. Maybe he felt she was a better face for the campaign. But it does seem like he was, you know, especially from what she said that day, you know, it is equally as important as she was.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and the Star Trek model was found. Did you guys read
about the 3 foot?
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. Yeah, I mean, we heard about this a few months ago, but they took them a while to like verify that it was, and it really is. It's crazy.
Where was it at again? Where did they find it at?
It popped up somewhere for like on eBay or something crazy like that. Some auction, not eBay, but it was some auction thing. And then, you know, they took it down. People were like, if this is real, then this is worth way more than you're trying to sell it for. So we don't know the exact details, but I want to hear what happened. But, you know, it was during the production of the motion picture, it was Gene Roddenberry's personal property, I think, and he loaned it to production and then went missing, and it hasn't been seen since then. So, you know,
it was in like a garage, like found things, you know, like whoever claimed this garage of stuff, and they didn't say whose it was, but it was in there. You know, like, so someone had just tucked it away someplace and put it in, you know, a storage unit.
They talk about they're going to, you know, fix it up and maybe put it in, like Rod Roddenberry said, maybe fix it up and put it in a museum or somewhere so that we can go look at it. That'd be sweet. All right. Well, we're going to be back in 2 weeks to discuss the next two episodes of Star Trek's Discovery's fifth and final season. Until then, you can send us an email, trekcompanion@gmail.com. Our Twitter handle is @trekcompanion. Thanks so much for spending an hour with us. Until next time, take it easy.
Bye, guys.
See ya.
Fun and past it.